And we're live. Good evening, everybody. And it's live from the Craftworks Caravan, or as Todd refers to it, as the East. You won't stay in the caravan with me, will you, Todd?
No.
I wouldn't go anywhere near it.
Nothing more to say. Seven years.
Tried it once, and I'm still trying to find the cream to get rid of the rash.
7 years I've lived in this caravan, going backwards and forwards from Sydney.
7 years of funkiness happening in that caravan.
It does get cleaned, believe it or not. Anyway, that's enough about my caravan.
And Mrs. Crafty comes out.
Very rarely. So this is Aussie Craft Distillers shooting the shit, people, for those that don't know, but I think everyone who's on and follows us knows. And the format is we talk to people in the industry. And what we do is we talk to people and we have conversations. Well, that's what talking's all about, I guess. But we also drink. So tonight we've got Jamie from Yak Creek from Yak and Dander. G'day, Jamie. How are you, bud?
Good, Crafty. Yourself?
Mate, Todd, I can't complain. Luke's in the corner and Todd's up in the top right on my side anyway. So what we're going to do before we get too serious is we're going to have a conversation about what we're all drinking. So I'll kick it off. So I got something brand spanking new, and this was given to me by a distiller, and the distillery is called Parramatta. We know Parramatta Distillery. A Parramatta Distilling Co., to be exact. It's called 72 Squared Whiskey. It's 2 years on the dot, and it's 37%. So it's a quite a low-strength whiskey. And I tasted it last night, and I went, not sure. And then I pulled out another whiskey that I love, and I tasted it, and I went, not sure. And then I pulled out a third whiskey and tasted it, and I went, not sure. So for those that don't know, sometimes your taste buds fuck around with you and it doesn't matter what you drink, it tastes like crap. So I've tasted it tonight and it tastes good. So this is what I'm having tonight. For those who don't know, 72 squared.
There you go.
In Parramatta. All right, what do you want, Jamie?
Well, I'm sitting in my distillery, Crafty, so only spot I can get some peace and quiet. Shh, don't say that too loud. I've come out and I've grabbed one of my own. Now, it's probably a bit sinful, but it's a new release we've got. So it's a dark French oak cask, single malt.
Nice.
Lovely.
When you say dark, what are you referencing when you say dark?
Well, when I say dark, I've used a lot of dark grain in it, you know. So,
oh, right. Okay. Yep.
So, yeah, and it's cool. And it's come out that way. It's a big chocolatey sort of rich flavors. Yeah.
That's good. That sounds good. All right. Luke, what do you got, mate?
I am madly typing away, putting in websites, whatever that we're drinking. I'm on the Imbue tonight.
The Imbue. Which one are you on? Oh, the bourbon cask.
The bourbon cask, which is a lovely drop. Very light in color. Very vanilla-y, almost heading into the summery type end of things. So
yeah, nice.
Cheers, Mick. That's what I'm on.
I reckon that would make a great highball, that whiskey.
That'd work.
That's what I'll be drinking in summer. All right, Todd. Todd, what you got, the Todd? Oh, SOD.
Roster Semi Gin. So nice sipping gin. It's also 37% ABV, which is nice. You feel like anything would be heavy.
So that's Sippelsfield Road.
Sippelsfield Road Distillery, or SRD.
Sippelsfield is a mouthful, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. I always pronounce it.
Especially when Crafty pronounces it wrong and then says, now say it.
Yeah, that happened. Yes, we, for those that don't know, the Todd and I and a few others were down in Barossa a couple of weeks ago, and Seppelsfield is where we were, as well as a few other places. We had a fantastic time when learnt a lot, as we always do on these trips. It don't happen enough. But, yeah, SRD was Seppelsfield Road Distillers, I think, from memory, and they did a rebrand a few years ago to SRD.
And I think, yeah, and I'm just finishing off a red from dinner, so
very good.
Nice repairs.
Lovely.
Right. Nice. All right, I'm going to kick it off because I got some questions. So, Jamie is a brewer and a distiller. So, Jamie has a deep appreciation of brewing and barley and other grains and contribution to flavor. So, Jamie, just give us a rundown of your history and how you got into brewing and distilling, and how do you see the relationship between the two?
Geez, cast your mind back when you're like 18, 17 years old. Like, I did a lot of home brewing then. It just continued on. Moved into all grain sort of brewing, sort of in probably my mid-30s, just small batch stuff. Decided to go down to Ballarat University down there and get qualified in malting and brewing, more short course style stuff.
Right.
So pretty much the distilling side came about. I started on small scale, just with some of those brews. Back in 2016, it was still a hobby, and it just grew, basically. Yeah.
It does that, doesn't it?
To the business.
When you start home brewing, it starts growing, and you become obsessive about it. Is that what happened for you?
Definitely. And it was 2016 sort of like to 2017 is where I thought, you know, I've got to go register this with the ATO, you know, just to that point. Yeah. The scale had grown to that point. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. And were you brewing on what sort of equipment were you just start brewing on? Just like a little grandfather or something, or were you using something a bit more rudimentary?
No, more rudimentary, just a 60, 70 litre pot, basically. Large, with just a little element in the bottom. Pretty much a stewing style kettle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
Yep. The old stew kettles you can get. Started that way, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So definitely you've got to get, I guess, a good appreciation for temperature control and really watch the pot boil when you're doing it that way, don't you?
Yeah, you do, and it's critical how you get to those points, you know. And as you scale up, those problems compound.
Yeah,
is probably a nice way of putting it. You know? So yeah,
absolutely. I remember when I started brewing. Yeah, I started. My wife made the fatal decision to buy me for my birthday one of those homebrew cordial kits, as I call them, and then I very quickly got obsessive and scaled myself up to a grandfather and doing all grain, which quickly snowballed into distilling as well. How did you find the transition from brewing to distilling? What triggered that move?
It was just more trying to just work out how to get into spirits, basically, particularly whiskey and rum. You know, I had a taste for whiskey and rums, and I thought, oh, I just want to give this a crack, and that's where it developed to from there. So, yeah. Look, I started off when I ran down to Melbourne, pretty much, from Albury Wodonga, and purchased a couple of 1,000-litre secondhand milk vats, open top, you know. Started that way. And then had a sort of like a 50, 60 litre style still, which quickly I realised that wasn't going to cut the mustard anymore. So, we went for a 1250 litre still, and we've also got a 150, 135 litre still, sort of spirit still.
And it's funny you mentioned milk fats. So for those that don't know, there's another distillery in Yakandanda called Backwoods, so Lee Atwood. So I was on the hunt for a milk fat for ages, you know, to convert to a mash tun, and Lee found one. And we were meeting up at Voyager Craft Malt in Witten Malt House. So he dragged up the milk fat to Witten. He was going to get a pallet of grain. And yeah, unloaded off his ute, loaded onto my ute, and that's how I got my milk fat, and that's how I got my mash tun. So it's got lineage back to Lee's handiwork, which is pretty cool.
I think you've got another item that I've had, and from yes. Lee, back to you again, haven't you, Crafty?
Yeah, it's good to mention that. So Lee had a 1,000-litre fermenter tank, and he finished with it and scaled up, and then Jamie got his hands on it. And then a few years ago, I was down there, and I said to Jamie, "What's happening with that?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm just going to get rid of it. I'm looking at offloading." And I went, "Oh, all right. How much do you want for it? I'll buy it." And I bought it on the spot. 1 year later, I picked it up. Actually, no, it was about 14 months later.
More than 1 year, I think. Yeah,
exactly. And in the meantime, Jamie was telling me that people that were saying, "Look, I'll buy, I'll pay double what you were trying to sell it for before." And Jamie was going, "No, no, I've got his money. He's going to come and get it at some stage." So I finally did. So went from Lee.
Jamie, it's called crafty time. It does happen, but it's sometimes.
I get it.
Won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Jamie, on the brew, so when you started distilling mash bills, were you actually taking full beer recipes with hops and distilling it, or were you doing it as just a beer wash?
No, just a beer wash, Crafty. I didn't have any hops or anything like that in it. Pretty yeah. much my first testing brew was full Pilsner grain.
Right, yep.
Barley Pilsner, yeah. Slowly it's developed into more elaborate grain mixes because we've got 20 beers and we brew the beers as well.
Yeah,
you always end up with, you know, a 25 kg bag of barley, be it a roast grain or a crystal malt or whatever, a chocolate malt. And I've moved to the point now, because we don't wholesale and I don't have to produce the same product, that as that grain becomes left over, I put that into a whisker mash bill now, just and let it go. Yeah. I keep it pretty conservative, but I still mix that grain in to give some of those different flavour profiles.
Yeah, which is very, very cool. Yeah, so Jamie and I and a number of other Australian distillers are very much centred on mash bills. So creating recipes with barley and other grains, building big flavour bases. So as opposed to just a single variety of barley, we actually create a complex base recipe. So that'd be a way to explain it, wouldn't you, Jamie? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way of explaining it. And, you know, I saw a while back where people say, don't run with your different grain profiles, just stay stuck, in a Pilsner or an ale malt, because, the flavour comes from the barrel. I find the flavour comes from both, basically, and the distilling, of course, as well. I think your dark grains or your different grain bills lend a big impart to the flavour.
What role do you see yeast as playing in the flavour as well?
I should have said yeast is another thing. Definitely a big flavour profile. Yeah, you can run certain sorts of yeast to get different flavor profiles immensely. You can get yeast that'll give you banana sort of profiles, if that makes sense, estuary, or more to your darker style, malted sort of flavors. So they're all there as well. Yeah.
Mm. And what sort of yeast do you use predominantly?
I use 3 or 4 yeast predominantly, mainly an M1 SAS spirit, so a dry yeast, because I know what I get with that, basically, and the performance that yeast gives me.
It's a soldier. It knows what it needs to do, distiller's yeast.
That's right, yeah. If I'm making vodka, for instance, I'll use a GR2 yeast. So it's a grain, specific grain, fairly neutral, gives you a little bit of grainy profile through that yeast. Yeah. So.
Hmm. And so when you're using, when you're creating a, I've got mozzies and moths flying around my bloody shed tonight. That was a big bastard, that one. I hope that was a moth, not a mozzie. When you're, so you create your own neutrals as well.
Correct, yes.
From what I see. So when you're creating a neutral, what sort of a yeast are you using for your neutral versus your whiskey?
Yeah, so that is a, I use a GR2 yeast or a high gravity yeast. They both give fairly neutral flavors, profiles, basically. Yeah. They're a little bit more steady in the kinetics about how they come on, especially the GR2, if that makes sense. So the temperature rise, you know, from and the way it consumes the sugars, basically an M1 will go like this, you know, really quick and high and give you temperature spikes, where a GR2 is very, consistent in its approach, basically.
Mm. Yeah, right.
A GR2 yeast is a good yeast to use if you haven't got cooling on larger sort of ferments, you know. So
okay. Yeah. And I guess that brings us into what is the heat, cool, what's the climate like where you are, and how does that impact your brewing aging process?
Yeah, so we get 40 degree days in summer, basically. The shed can get up to 50, 55, where we are doing our mashes. And, you know, I have barrels sitting in the shed at floor level and up high in the roof. Up high in the roof, we get very high losses. And you can get up there in the middle of summer at 65, 70 degrees. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's hot, and you can't load those barrels with a high ABV up in the roof. They just bleed too hard, you know. They'll pop corks, carry on like no tomorrow. So, and your losses just get massive if you've got a high ABV up high in the roof. Yeah. So the higher ABV ones we keep down. Up there I put 45, 55 ABV, yeah.
Mm.
So you're basically getting a lot more water soluble sugars in the lower ABV in those higher barrels, and then you blend that off with other barrels. Is that what you do?
No, not really. Yes to your answer, but no, I don't usually blend off. Most of my whiskies I release as single malt, single barrels. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I just sort of run through and check. I actually haven't blended any barrels yet. How's that?
There you go. Is that something you would consider doing?
I've actually got a couple of barrels up high that are well and truly over oaked at the moment. Yeah, I tried them probably, I don't know, 4 weeks ago, and I went, well, now I've got to work out how to get these to blend in with another barrel, you know. So a lesser matured barrel, you know, maybe an ex-bourbon barrel that I've got down low or something like that, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, maybe something like a reef or bourbon or something to soften it out.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I you know,
Sorry.
I was just going to say, blending single cask and blending barrels. It's a skill set's very, very different. It's like when people say, "Oh, you're a distiller," and you go, "Well, that's only a small part of the job." You know, brewing, distilling, you know, working with single casks, blending casks. It's you've got different skill sets for all that, and. Yeah, brewing, very specialized skill sets, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They're all separate too, you know. So I normally say jack of all trades, master of none is what I like to think of myself as.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, interesting comment from Hammo. On the live chat, saying that on the website we can see that your whiskies generally range from 46% to 48%. Now, there's also, if I'm reading this right, there's also 25 bottles of the 25 single malt whiskey, red wine, French oak cask at cask strength. What's cask strength for that one?
Yeah, so it'll be 64%, 66%, that one I'd take.
Yeah, right.
Hang on, let me just have a look. 63%, stand corrected.
There you go.
Wow, that's gone up. So what sort of barreling strength do you think you went in on that one?
That would be in, you know, I don't get a lot of fluctuation crafting in my barrel that I put down low. The one up high I do, yeah. So, right. You know, it might have, I don't need to check, but it probably went in at 63.8 or 4, something like that. Not a lot. Yeah.
So your climate, you've got a bit of altitude where you are, is that right?
A little bit, not a lot, 300-400 meters.
Yeah, okay. But it's quite a, you have quite cool winters and warm summers, would that be fair to say? Or
yeah, correct, yeah. So we sit at the foothills of the mountains, sort of, foothills of Mount Stanley. So, you know, I'm in a bit of a valley as well, so, you know, you get those cool changes come through regularly, which is what helps work your barrels, you know.
Yeah.
And are you in bushfire risk there?
Definitely, yeah. I'm in a high bushfire overlay area, yes.
How do you sort of handle and mitigate that risk? Is there, you must have a lot of fire protection built into your shed. And your bomb store there. How have you had to, handle that?
So we have a full sprinkler system on the shed and inside the shed. And I'm talking like mass irrigation flood. So I'm not worried about anything getting wet in the shed. It's about trying to save the stock and the barrels, basically. Mm. Just flood the shed completely as much as I can. Yeah.
Wow.
So same on the roof, big irrigation sprinklers on the roof, a pump directly in the creek, plus backup pumps on the house, which the shed is next door to the house, the distillery is, so which just flood the whole place. So fingers crossed it works, but you know, we are in a high bushfire overlay area. Yeah.
So you haven't had to test it yet?
No, thank God. I have tested the flood inside, yes. Unintentionally once, too.
Oh, shit.
No, that was all right. It was only the barrel area. It didn't end up in the main distillery area here, so in the cellar door area. I was lucky.
Yeah.
So,
you're right beside a creek as well. Has that ever caused you grief?
The creek floods, yeah, but it doesn't cause us grief. It floods our tables and chair area, you know, but it doesn't come up into the distillery. It's probably a meter short of that. Easy. Yeah.
That's still bloody close.
A meter in height is what I mean. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Not to the door.
I'd be shitting bricks if it were a meter away.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, so Todd and I visited, I think, what was it, Todd, 2 years ago, maybe, or maybe even longer?
Roughly 2 years ago, yes.
Yeah.
So, a fermenting tank and leaving it there.
Yeah, true. That's right. So, but anyway, it was part of a bit of a road trip where we tripped around to a few distilleries and maltsters and that. But Todd, talk about, when we arrived there and just it, your place is pretty, mate. It's a stunning sight, but I'll let Todd talk about it rather than me.
Gee, thank you.
The bus.
The first thing we discovered when we tried to get to Yak Creek Distillery is that the main road had been shut for a while. I think you had some issues with a bridge or something at that time, so we had to find the back road. It was a bit of an adventure in itself, especially with Crafty listening to instructions so intently. But then when we finally got worked up enough to get to your place, it was a sigh of relief driving in the front gate, and just it's like a little oasis. And it was really a really pleasant distillery to go to, really.
Yeah, I say I'm spoiled, Todd. So, yeah. And we've done a fair bit more work since you guys have been here. So, yeah.
Yeah, whereas I go out to the shed and have to muck out the inch of mud on the ground. Into the shed because it's flooding.
When people talk about their distillery being a shed, I think Crafty's shed trumps all notion of it just being a shed.
It is a shed. I refer to it as a shed. And I mill, and
that's been nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about me. So what I'd add to that is, your business is very centered around coming and experiencing your distillery, and you've got a really just it's one of those cellar doors that puts a smile on your face. You come in and you got beer there that you've made, you got spirits that you've made, and it's a really social, friendly little environment. Did you start with that idea, Jamie, or was that just an evolution?
Yeah, it was more an evolution. Like, I always wanted the cellar door, and it's sort of hard to explain, Crafty, but the idea was to have a cellar door where people could come and just a small little area, like, you know, fit 8 people or so into a little area. And then the ground side is what grew, you know, the outdoors grounds. So, and it just works. It's great. It's pretty, like you say. It's next to the creek. You know, our water for all our distilling comes from that creek. Hence why Lee did so well this year. He's still pinching my water from the creek. No, he's not. He's got taps in himself. But, yeah. But yeah, I'm just spoilt with the grounds. Basically, we developed that over COVID, and those shuts during COVID allowed us to do a little bit more landscaping every time.
Right. So tourism is a big part of your business, would you say?
Tourism and locals are a very big part of our business. Yeah.
Tourism and locals. Yeah.
We've got the epic trail that we sit at the foot at, which is a mountain bike track through from Beechworth down to Yakandanda. So right. It comes right past our front door. We get a fair bit of trade off that too. Mountain bikers coming in. So, yeah, for beers or whiskies or rums, whatever.
So just flashing up a map, just to give a rough idea of where Yakandanda is, And then, yeah, where you actually are situated from that. So how far from Wodonga would you say you are?
20 minutes, so 25K.
Yeah, right. So 25K from Wodonga, a bit of a round trip there from Beechworth. And then, of course, yeah, short drive or walk. You can walking distance from Central Yakandanda there?
Yeah, there's a path that runs along the creek. It's a 15, 20-minute walk along the creek to us, yeah. So we're just outside. We're 2K outside of Yakandanda. Yeah.
Mm. So with all those cyclists coming through, does that mean you get a lot of Lycra?
More mountain bikers, less Lycra. How's that?
Right, okay.
So the mountain bikers like the short style, the baggy shorts, and they got a bit of flair to them.
Yeah, yeah. I need to flash up not some Lycra or mountain bikers, but just a little view there over the outside that I'm just nicking from your gallery. Gorgeous bush setting. Now you can, there's a whole gallery for those playing along at home. There's a whole gallery of photos on the website, which is
come on.
A lot of chafing. you can jump on the website, yakcreekdistillery.com.au, and there's a whole gallery on there of, beautiful site. So how long has that been in development for? And so you live, your house is there as well.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So this was originally my car motorbike shed. Which is next door to the house. And then the distillery is on the opposite side of the house now. So no one gets to come through the house or see the house, but basically the door to the distillery is out the other side. It's all screened off. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And so, Yakandanda is not a big place. From my experience, blink and you'll miss it. How do you go, being such a small town, having two established craft distilleries competing against each other?
One's the top and one's the bottom of the town.
And to be honest, we don't see it as competing. We see it as an attraction because we've got two distilleries here. People that want to actually come and visit will normally go to both. And they offer two different products completely. Like, we'll offer gin. Lee has gins, but none of our gins are really aligned. And the same with the whiskies. Like, my whiskies are completely different to Lee's whiskies. We just complement each other. So we've also got the Barking Owl, which is a little distillery just out at Wirragee. So it makes a central mass, much like the wineries, you know, how they slowly developed into one area. Well, they're all over the place now, but, you know, as in they created a mass, people came. So, and it's sort of working that way, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it literally is a five minute drive, 3.4K stumble. Between
distilleries.
Not the way you went.
That's the way we wanted to go.
That's the way I went last time, Todd, when I was down a couple of months ago. Yeah. I went the
We saw parts of the country that very few people ever see, I think.
So you've got a walking trail there from distillery to distillery, and you've got a great pub that we went to, Jamie, when I was in town last, and you, me, and Lee met up, and so you got a watering hole right smack in the middle between your distillery and Lee's distillery.
Correct. There's two pubs in town, but definitely correct. Yeah. So you won't go dry if you're walking between the two.
Now, Ian asks whether you share casks at all between you, and do you do any other collaborations between your distilleries?
Not really. We talk when Lee and I catch up. we talk about what's going on, but we do have similar casks, like for instance, Starlight Lane Winery had some casks for sale. So, you know, I got half and Lee got half. So that's about where we've collaborated sort of on that point. So, yeah. But not as in we haven't come up with any blends or anything like that. We've discussed it, but never gone to that point of doing it yet. So, yeah.
That would be an interesting...
What is your cask program?
What's mine?
Yeah, what's yours, if you don't mind me asking?
No, it's all good. So I particularly like X-Red wine casks. You know, I've got a little French oak cask at the moment that had a pepperjack wine in it, you know, that I've aged a whiskey in, and you can really pick that up in the back end, that pepperjack wine. A little bit spicy, you know, on the palate, on the back end of that whiskey. Yeah. So I particularly like those, and there's sort of a little bit of an unknown. I particularly smell most of the casks that I want to get, and if I like that smell, if it's rich or spicy or however, then I, normally pick the casks,
Do you get them?
What size are you going into?
So started at 85s, Todd.
Yeah.
Moved into 120s. We currently are running 235s and 200 casks. So the 200s are ex-bourbon casks. So,
okay. Yeah, and the 230s would be Barrique's wine casks. Would that be right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you toast them or char them, or you just go in straight filled barrels?
A bit of both. I've done some myself. I've built my own torch toasting gun, basically. But I found it's a gas-fired gun, off-compressed air, but I found that gives you a little bit of a gassy sort of taste early on to the cask, you know. So I've had a guy down in Corowa, as you're aware, Crafty, that will do toasting down there for us to different levels. So,
nice. Yeah.
But most of the casks, only 50% or 30, I'm trying to guess. I'm guessing here, but 40 or 50% of the casks I might get re-toasted. And normally they're the smaller casks that I like to run, those 120s now. Mm-hmm. The bigger casks I normally just leave as they are.
For those who want to know about wood, so if you're dealing with winemakers, it's imperative you know if the barrels have been sulfured or not, because winemakers use sulfur to kill off nasties and that, and sulfur's bad news for a whiskey maker. So always check with your winemaker if they've sulfured the barrels or not. I haven't had any bad experiences, but I've heard bad experiences.
Yeah, correct.
For a winemaker, it's just part of the course of management of their barrels.
So you've got three whiskies on the website for sale at the moment. What's your sort of release schedule? How often do you like to release a new whiskey, and what's coming up?
Yeah, so we normally keep... four on the bar, which are down at that 46-48%. So when one of those run out is when I'll release something else, if that makes sense. I've currently got corn base, so a bourbon, basically, which we can't call it that, of course, that I've actually decanted out of the barrel at the moment, sitting there ready to be bottled. I just haven't done that. There's no need to do that, but I just got to that point where I went, it's got enough flavor profiles and where I want it to be, so I'll just pull it out of the cask. So that's sitting there, and there's probably another one or two whiskies that are due to be looked at very soon to come out of the cask as well.
And when looking at a barrel and looking to do a new release, what are you looking for?
Look, I like something It depends. So on the barrel and the type, you know. So I did an Apero release and I pulled out only half the cask. Now, this is a couple of years ago. I think, Crafty, you guys might have tried that when you were down here, that Apero. And I only pulled out half the cask because I wasn't sure of how, and like I said, I'm pretty honest about this, I wasn't sure about how much rich flavour of the Apero I wanted in that whiskey, if that makes sense. And I let the rest of the cask sit for another year, and then I pulled that out, the other half. And I've kept two bottles, and just to see that development phase, you know, and how it developed over that time.
Fascinating.
And I preferred the first one compared to the second one. The second one had a lot more of the Apero characteristics, but I preferred the first one. But a lot of the people coming in to buy the product definitely preferred the second one. Does that make sense? So, you know, not everyone's palates are aligned where you want them to be or where mine is. So it's just if you think the whiskey is developed where I like it, from, you know, sweetness, bite. I've got to be honest, I like a whiskey with a bit of back end bite to it. When I say that, either heat or spice, if that makes sense.
So that's why you're going for things like the French oak casks and that sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, they give you that bit more spicy. So I like a whiskey like that. And not everyone likes that. And if you've got a Scotch whiskey drinker who likes those clean Scotch whiskies, he really struggles to drink, or she, to drink one of our French oak casks, you know. But we do have bourbon casks that we release as well, which are a lot softer. So, yeah.
So that Apero cask that you decanted half and bottled it and the other half you left, was it softer? The second release, as in it was just a lighter, not lighter, but more approachable?
Yes, it was rounder on the back end. But it was fuller in flavour, a lot richer of the Apero notes, you know, that sherry sort of notes. It was quite rich in that. You knew that it was an Apero cask big time, or a sherry cask, where early on you were sort of going, oh, that adds to it. What's that adding? You know what I mean? You're like, you pick it, but you're trying to define exactly what it is. Does that make sense? So it leaves you a little bit guessing, where the later batch was just a bang. Yep, that's what I've got. Yeah.
The sherry bomb.
Well, it wasn't a bomb, but yeah, you knew it was definitely there. Yeah. You knew what you were drinking, basically.
What you've done is you've introduced quite a headspace of oxygen above the whiskey in the barrel.
Correct.
So that would actually change the profile of the whiskey quite substantially. It'd be quite interesting. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to taste them side by side like you did.
So I do that quite often, but more so in a test. That was a release sort of scenario, but more so in a test scenario now. You know, like I might pull off a 375 bottle here, and here, just for my own knowledge and development, basically.
Peter,
do you get to experiment with is everything an experiment for you, or do you go into things sort of knowing, oh, this is what I'm going to achieve for this release, this is what I want to achieve for this release, or is it more, I'm just going to see where this takes me?
With whiskey and rum, I like to see where it takes me. With your gins that we do, or your vodkas, they're more dedicated to this is what I want to do, you know. And particularly, you know, like a gin, for instance, I will drink it and go, you know what, I just want to pull a little bit of that out, you know. So next time I do the gin, I'll adjust that recipe slightly. But with the whiskies, it's more about let's just see where it takes us.
What's the most outlandish thing that you've experimented with?
probably, yeah, definitely whiskey and the rum. The Blackstrap rums I had, or still do have. You know, I did several back sets in the still on those. Left the Dunder in, is what I'm saying. Big volumes, to get that really rich sort of Blackstrap rum flavour into it. So that was a bit of experimentation. With the whiskies, using a fair bit of dark malt. Like, I'm loading a lot of dark malt in a couple of whiskies we've got aging at the moment.
So the dark malts, are they, so a dark crystal malt there, it's a heavy caramelization, or what sort of malt are you talking there?
Yeah, roasted barley, full roast, heavy dark roast barleys or dark chocolates, just to see where it takes me. Now, they're only up in 85 litre barrels, they're small little batches, but it'll just be interesting to see what comes of those. And they're in an ex-red wine. One's actually in an ex-rum barrel. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, right. Reason I ask is I've poured myself.
Oh, wow, you got a bottle of that. Yeah.
I've got a bottle of that. Which, so that's from our friends at the Single Malt Whiskey Club. Yeah, this one I forgot that I was subscribed.
Yep.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you, isn't it?
Mm.
Brad knows what he's doing there. And yes, that one's coming. It's the concept is interesting in that so it was initially matured for 4 years at their Oceanside distillery. And then aged for another 12 months on board a Tasmanian abalone boat.
Good name for it.
Which, so then it's gone 2,500 nautical miles on the port side of the boat, exposed to the elements.
Now, so is it very I think the APA would have very interesting rules around controlling that as a bond store, going, this thing freaking moves all the time.
I'd be interested to know how they
got on the side of a boat. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So that all that extra contact with the wood and whatnot, it is quite oaky.
It's sloshing around and
there's a lot of spice, wood and spice in that. Yeah, it makes for an interesting dram.
Yeah. No, it's
not sure if I get the salt.
I'll just add something. I was going to mention it earlier on. So Peter Bignall told me one day how he decides what strength bottle of whiskey is. He'll take a bottle sample and he'll do it at different strengths. And then he'll just put them all on the bench. And then over a course of time, as he goes past, he'll just sample them. And then at a given period of time, he'll stop and he'll look at the levels. And the lowest level, obviously, that's the one he's drunk the most, but that's the right one. But then he sets his level based on that. How do you determine your strength?
That is scientific. That is very scientific.
That is people away. How do you determine your level, your ABVs, Jamie?
Very similar. I've got little 60 mil bottles and I cut the little 60 mil bottles and they sit out the back, and every time I come in to the distillery, I'll just try one. And yeah, pretty much very similar to what Peter's talking about. You know, you go back and you soon realize which one you've gone back to a few times. Does that make sense? And then, that's where we're going to cut that whiskey. Exactly. So, yeah.
And when you cut your whiskey, so there's my understanding, there's two schools of thought. There's one, which is, say you're at 65, you'll just throw in a whole lot of water and take it down to whatever strength you want. And the other one, which is more influenced by the cognac techniques, and this is the one we subscribe to from early days, you break it down in stages. You add the water slowly, then let it sit, taste it, and then break it down further. What do you do, Jamie?
Look, now I run with the first one.
Yeah.
So I'll just cut it back to what we want from that bottle point, then seal it and cap it again, and let it sit for another couple of months like that, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, right, right.
I don't add in slowly, no. But, you know, I'm only cutting a barrel at a time as well. So I'm not doing, you know, 5 or 6 barrels into a large vat and then trying to do it that way. So, yeah.
Are you cutting in the barrel or are you cutting in a vessel? You decant it and then cut it, or do you actually cut it in the barrel and let it sit?
No, both ways on that one, Crafty. So if I've got headroom in the barrel, I'll do the barrel. Yep. If I've got that headroom, if I don't have the headroom, I will go the other way. And that's sometimes why I pull off, you know, a 25 release of cast strength to give me a bit of headroom in the barrel.
What's the benefit of doing it in the barrel versus in a vessel?
You've still got the barrel timber influencing the product, if that makes sense, and it's still breathing as well, and a bit of oxidization as you add the water, you're adding air and that sort of stuff as well.
It's still technically aging.
Yeah, yeah.
You are technically aging on timber, yeah.
Yeah, but I also believe that, you know, water and alcohol, they don't like each other, right? And if you take a whiskey and you rip it out of a barrel and you dump a whole lot of water in, there's a lot of shock value, a lot of happening between the water and alcohol. So personally, and this has taken me years to get to this point, but I'm moving more now to when we identify a cask that we think is getting ready, is we'll start breaking it down in the barrel. So it's more homogenous by the time it comes out of the barrel. But Jamie, what you said, that's, I like that trick of pulling in a percentage of it at cast strength to give you that headroom so you can actually do it, because sometimes you're right, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Look, there's all different techniques, and it's Jamie, you'd vouch for this. The more you're in this game, the more you realize that there's so many different ways to slice and dice things. There's hard and fast rules, but there's so many ways to slice and dice.
Correct. Yeah, very correct on that. And, you know, there's also a lot of different opinions out there on different ways of doing things, and each have got their own merit. It's just you've got to pick what works for you, you know. So, yeah.
Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one. I'll say it.
Very true.
So where to next for Yak Creek? What's the next couple of years hold for you?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I've been quiet lately because I've had a health issue. So I'm coming out the other side of that now. That's good. So I don't need to ramp up any. I really have tried to avoid targeting wholesaling. I'm really trying to keep just a cellar door scenario happening. We wholesale to small restaurants and, you know, areas like that, and pubs and so on. But we don't chase it, and I don't want to end up at Dan Murphy's or anywhere like that. I try and keep it unique here. So I keep a rotation of between 75 to 100 barrels sort of on the rotate. And that's all I really need if you sort of look at it from a point of view of not going wholesale and not pushing it out there. And it's quite a good stock, I think, for the way we operate. So I'll have product, you know, ending up out at 8-10 years, if it's acceptable for the losses and the climate here. So I've actually put some shipping containers in and put underground at the moment to try and get, and I've got to move my red line. I haven't got anything in them yet, but I'll try and get them into the red line so I can age some barrels underground as well.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's quite nice.
I might move some of my higher ones that have already got a bit of loss, higher age ones, into that area to see if I can then get a bit more, you know, get them out to 10, 15 years. So, yeah.
Mm. That'll be really interesting. So that's a big hole you've had to dig.
For us?
Yeah. to bury a shipping container, that's a damn big hole.
It's a big hole.
There's two side by side, correct? Yeah.
Gosh.
Technically, the whole one has to be half the container, and then you can tip it all on top.
It's just into the side of a bank, basically, but it's got a meter of fill over it still. And but the front doors are opening up now, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
No, it makes sense. If that's good enough for Carvalan in Taiwan, who were suffering 25% angel share, who have now built tunnels, I believe, to slow the maturation down.
Mm.
It's a credible way to do it for sure.
Mm.
Okay. Now going back to barrels and temperature, there's a question here from Ian. Would the water temperature make a difference to reduce emulsification when cleaning the barrel? So when decanting the barrel, potentially?
He's saying cleaning the barrel. So I think he's meaning when you flush a barrel before you use it, rehydrate a barrel. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're
saying? Yep.
Yeah.
So would you rehydrate with hot water or cold water?
Both. So it depends. So if I've got a well-sealed barrel that doesn't need hydration, I normally, you know, that's got X red wine in it, I'll just pour straight spirits in that, you know, as long as it's dry, as in there's no 2 litres of wine or 3 litres of wine sitting in it. If I've got a dehydrated barrel, I actually heat water up to boiling and pump that straight in, and that creates it to swell straight away, you know, and it'll seal very quickly that way with hot water. Now, you're also sterilizing the barrel and all that in that process as well, if it's been sitting around a fair while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Is there a difference in rehydrating a barrel using water versus using steam?
Couldn't tell you. I haven't used steam, but I'd suggest it would be. Yeah.
Yeah, steam. I've used steam. Not very effective. It's just from Bunnings, a little steamer. But steam will sterilize and it'll rehydrate. It's gentler than boiling water.
Right.
Because sometimes it depends. Again, you know, it depends who you talk to. There's different schools of thought. One is if you use boiling water, you'll strip tannin out. And others say no, it doesn't make much difference. Now that was Lee who just popped on for a second. Was it? Did I just see on the screen? No, not yet.
Comment
backwards. Yeah. Anyway. So it really depends, doesn't it, Jamie? It's you got to find your own way, don't you? As we say.
Correct. And you're right. If you use hot water, you like boiling water, for instance, to seal the barrel and help it, the tannins do come out pretty heavily. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes you want that, so it all comes down.
Bastard.
Correct.
Did you get it?
Got him.
Skitter or.
Like a multi. Mr. Miyagi, that shit.
Sorry. Got any travel coming up, Jamie? Any travel coming up, work related, as in do you want to go and see any distilleries or anything, or local or international? Or
Yeah,
I know you said you were just getting over health issues and that, so you're slowly on the mend there.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much mended, so that's the main thing.
That's good to hear.
Look, Yeah, well, touch wood. How's that? Look, we've just been up central New South Wales just past you guys, pretty much. I tried to avoid distilleries because I had the dog and family, you know, with us. But I did drop in. Sorry?
Have a break, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was only for a week and a half. But I did drop into the farmer's wife, you know.
Ollie and Gavin.
Just popped in there for a look and sampled the gins. I was very, very impressed. Loved them, yeah. Actually bought a couple and I'm going to order a couple more online. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing some very cool seasonal gins, aren't they?
They do, yeah. I very much enjoyed them.
Yeah, nice. And from what I've seen from the photos and that, it's one impressive cellar door joint too.
It's a lovely place, I tell you. Really well done, the whole place, yeah. And Serene,
I'd just like to link into the comments for those playing along at home.
What was that?
I'll put a link in the comments for those playing along at home.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, no, so Farmer's Wife, Gavin and Kylie. I should try and get them on next year. Small husband and wife team that are just doing their own thing, carving out. Yeah, they've got a real cool cellar door experience and really solid local community support.
We've lost him. All right, it's coming back.
Yep, he's back.
There he is.
Yeah, so that would have been quite a good trip, I would imagine, Jamie.
Yeah, it was good. We just did a little bit of camping and, just a bit of seaside stuff and headed back here,
Nice.
Speaking of travel, so, Crafty, you've got a big trip coming up.
I've got a trip of a lifetime, people. Trip of a lifetime. So I'll frame it by saying my wife says, Mrs. Crafty says, but we can't afford it, and I'm saying, well, I can't afford not to. I need it for my soul. I need it for my soul, people. So I'm going to Ireland. I'm going to specifically Waterford Distillery, and I'm spending 3 days staying at the distillery and deep diving with those guys, who are good friends of mine, into their concept or their application of the concept of whiskey terroir. So I'm spending time with the head distiller, head brewer, with farmers, the agronomists. Going to the malt house, it's going to be just a full-on trip. But that is only 3 days. I'm there for 3 weeks, and I'm going to distilleries, I'm going to breweries, and I'm going to – Todd looks so sad – distillers, brewers, doing it all, and I'm traveling online on my own.
Oh, I know.
So
us hard-working –
Not listening to you.
I'm just looking forward to the 3 a.m. phone calls and barrage of text messages.
Actually, no, they'll probably be at the right time for a change.
Maybe. We might get lucky. We might dodge a bullet there.
You complain about my social media now. My God, you wait. It'll be 15 posts a day.
Look at this. Just so you know, guys, every single time I've sat down for a meeting at work, my paid work, Crafty's phoned me. It's like he's got a little spy cam on my shoulder or something. It's just amazing.
So what I've got is I've got a motion detector. So when I see that he's not moving, I know he's in a meeting. So that's when I ring him, always.
And I've got a really good ringtone for a Crafty. It's really unique.
Silence.
We wishes.
This is an annoyance. But since we're talking about awesome things, let's talk about Whiskey Fight Club, people. So Whiskey Fight Club was born in my head 3 years ago, and it finally got extracted and actualized. And so Aussie Craft Distillers Shooting the Shit proudly presents Whiskey Fight Club at the Globe Hotel in Rolleston, which is a country town about 3 hours west of Sydney and about 40 minutes from my shed. It is one of my favorite pubs on planet Earth, and we are having Spike Club. So it's me, Craftworks, versus Crafty the Cruiser versus Dave the Decimator from Coastal Stone, aka Manly Spirits. And it's on the 21st of September. It's a ticketed event. And basically, the audience will participate. They'll get to drink all the blind tasted whiskey. They'll get to judge Emperor style, thumb up. It's okay. Yeah. Don't like it. And we'll get a score. And then the distillers will blind taste the product. They'll have to identify, is it their whiskey or their opponent's? Then it gets harder. They'll have a number of other whiskies, and they'll have to identify which one of theirs it is. If they get it right, they're the hero on the round. If they get it wrong, they get sledged by the distiller, by the MC, and by the audience, and hopefully we've got people in the room. And we do it not once, not twice. How many times, Todd?
What?
How many times?
Three times.
He lost the moment. I was building, building, building.
I like always, I zoned out at about 5 minutes into your ramble.
Right? You promote it. So there it is, people. Whiskey Fight Club, our first. Say,
does Lukey and I get to pick the blind for you?
We do.
It's randomized. The whole thing's randomized.
Yeah, randomized by us.
But randomized in the sense that you don't even know what we've taken out of your shed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
To a degree. You won't know the stuff we've taken home. But, so you can buy your tickets via our website, shootingtheshit.com.au. Get in to secure your spot. So shootingtheshit.com.au. So that is the 21st of September, which is also my birthday. Please come along for my birthday.
Celebrate.
Feel free to buy me a birthday drink. We've got Dave from Manly Spirits, Coastal Stone, and of course Crafty. Should be a good night. I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be a fun night. What do you think, Jamie? Do you think that sounds like fun?
I reckon that's a go. Good luck to Dave and good luck to yourself, Crafty. I will be really interested to see if you can pick your own whiskies that the boys have picked out of barrels that you don't know about.
Well, we know he can't pick his own whiskey. He's been tried on that before.
Test runs.
I got to tell you a true story. So I, for those who don't know, my distillery is the back of a pub. So I walked in the pub and I told them all about shooting the shit. About Whiskey Fight Club. And so one of the guys goes and grabs a whiskey and Coke, and he puts it in front of me, and he goes, all right, tell us what that is. And he goes, it's one of yours. And I went, right, okay. So I taste it, and I go, oh, I know what this is. Oh, it's the capity. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba, right? And he goes, you're wrong. And I went, oh, shit. And he goes, it's all I am. And I went, oh, shit. And he goes, nah, you don't know squat. You're going to do really bad in this Whiskey Fight Club. And he's right, I will.
So it'll be a really good chance for us to sledge Craig.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of sledging. Hey, look, it's very much on my brand of humanizing the art of whiskey. It's storytelling, it's fun, people. You don't need to take it so serious, just enjoy a drink. And three, no whiskey fuckery. No whiskey wankery. This is just gonna be fun. Australian whiskeys. And you're going to get people that get to try Australian whiskies, which would never normally try the Australian whiskies, which I think is going to be cool. Yep.
Yeah.
And we're going to have cans of Coke and cups on the standby. So if we see someone in the audience just going like this, there's a can of Coke, there's a cup, go nuts.
Yeah. So it should be a really good night. So again, 21st of September, out at the Globe Hotel in Ralston. All the details are on our website, shootingtheshit.com.au.
When you go to the events page on the website.
Yes, there's a link at the top through to events.
Yeah.
What are we doing in 2 weeks' time, guys?
Yes. Well, in 2 weeks' time, who have we got, Craig?
So we have We think. He said yes, and we're waiting for that final confirmation. But we're pretty sure we have Mr. Richard Seal from Foursquare Rum. And we will have guest presenters of Brad Wright from Rum Tribe and the Sigma Whiskey Club, and also Aliers from Karoo Distillery, who are rum makers. And so Richard is the antagonist of the rum world, would be the best way, I think, to describe him. A very, very passionate man, very, very knowledgeable, and makes amazing cracking rum, recognized in the world as some of the best, and very opinionated. So we're expecting a really full-throated, fun night. And if all goes according to plan, we're doing a live shooting the shit on this one, aren't we, lads?
Yes, which is always terrifying for me.
Yeah.
We'll have an audience that can ask questions directly to the man. So
I'm not concerned about the audience. I'm concerned about the fucking technology. That's my terror.
That's you're the IT man.
Last time we attempted this, the technology almost let us down. So poor Lukey.
He had a full head of hair
before we went to that.
So for that, because it is a live event, we're holding that at Bar 26 in Lilyfield, at the Bar 26 Autocraft Distilling OCD venue. So jump onto the website again, shootandshit.com.au, and reserve your spot. There are limited spots available. It is free. So, yeah, get on down. Come join us. Yeah, we just want we need to know how many people are going to come, so that we can make sure we've got enough spots for everyone. So please do get on there, reserve your spot. It is free, it should be a good night as well.
And it is a bar, people, so you can order your drinks, and there's a great food menu there as well. So it's a top joint. It's a speakeasy bar in Lilyfield in Sydney. Top joint. Mm.
Definitely. So please jump on there, and I'll post a link into the comments. Jump on the website for those tickets. And Jamie, thank you so much for joining us and spending an hour or so with us. It's fascinating to hear your story and have a bit of a deep dive into your process. I'll put up again so people can jump on to yakcreekdistillery.com.au. Yakcreekdistillery.com.au, which I will also put into the comments as well, of course, to buy all the bits and pieces and subscribe to the mailing list. How's the best way for people to know what's coming up, Jamie?
Yeah, there's a subscribe button there on our website. It's my understanding for a mailing list. So, yeah.
Excellent. So jump on there, yakcreekdistillery.com.au, and start up today. Also jump on the socials, of course. Jamie, thank you so much.
By all means, pop in and see them direct. It is a really good distillery to go to.
And Yakandad is a beautiful place.
Yeah. Absolutely. Come and see what our little town's got to offer. It's great. And like I said, there's three distilleries around local to Yak. So, yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you get your tickets for 2 weeks' time. We will catch you all soon. Stay tuned for the sponsors. Bye-bye.